in just about an hour's time. She's going to be setting up on stage to perform at the Dominion Chalmers United Church, Mireille Asselin, teaming up with the Amici Chamber Ensemble. They put out an album called Inspired by Canada, featuring some pretty fantastic tunes written by Canadians, including her take on Claude Levallée's Le Vieux Piano.
Le piano est mort. Et celle-là l'aimait. Quand elle était jeune et quand elle venait se saouler le dedans de pathétique. En se frottant au piano nostalgique. Qu'il était beau, le piano, bon piano, vieux piano, des copains, à l'époque des copains, chez Bianco, l'Argentin, vers 3 heures du matin, quand il buvait son demi-doublé.
Shouting, I know, as she tears that story locked up in the old dead piano. I don't think you can get much more dramatic than the heroine in Claude Lavallée's Le Vieux Piano. And they're channeling her Edith Piaf with every rolled R on Ravel, his soprano, Mireille Asselin. It is just one of the songs that Mireille dives into on her new album with the Amici Chamber Ensemble, Inspired by Canada, also featuring the works of Leonard Cohen and Joni Mitchell, Scott Joplin, Ralph Vaughan Williams, and more. I don't know how much Mireille Asselin relates to the heroine in Le Vieux Piano, whether she saunters up to Serge Kradjian on the piano on stage, how much of the en se frottant au piano nostalgique gets reenacted on stage, whether she's found a muse and a ghost in blue jeans. But when that heroine sings of 20 years worth of song, I think maybe that is something Mireille has in common with her. Because if she were to flash back a few decades, her story would be here in Ottawa at an arts high school, discovering that music could really be a career. That's right. We are where it all began for her. At least we like to take credit for that. Before the Met, before Carnegie Hall, before Orfeu, before Canadian Opera Company, before Opera Italia, before Kiwanis singing competitions, even before the movie Magic Flute Diaries, we started the dream, ladies and gentlemen. So, Mireille Asselin is back for Music and Beyond in 1 hour's time, but she is with me in studio now. Hello there.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You're a little too young to feel all the weathered, beaten down memories of the woman in the Vieux Piano, or are you?
But isn't she fantastic?
She is.
Just totally amazing. That song always reminds me of that scene, Empty Chairs and Empty Tables from Les Mis, this sort of nostalgia of coming into this place where you have all these memories of your youth,
yeah,
and then how the world has sort of changed, and you know, it's in that sort of realization that things move on, but maybe you don't want to move on from
all these people are gone now,
exactly.
You're channeling.
Yeah, it's fun and raucous, but also profoundly sad, that song. And I think it's so beautiful.
Do you picture Bianco when you sing?
Well, it's hard not to picture Serouge in that role, as you were saying. He's just sort of the like quintessential piano man. He's there just embodying the spirit constantly. And so, yeah, Bianco is very much Serouge in this piece.
So it's Serouge in blue jeans.
That's right. Always. I think maybe black jeans most of the time. But yeah.
Now, in all seriousness, do you have to, obviously you're no stranger to taking on characters in opera, but when you're singing a song like Le Vieux Piano, are you tapping into things you've experienced yourself, or are you completely going to that character?
That's a good question. I mean, in the case of this character, it's always really difficult to imagine sort of what age will do to you. You know, that's just not something that you can really extrapolate as much as you would like to think that you could. Mm-hmm. That being said, I mean, when I hear the song, when I sing it, all I can do is go back to listening to Edith Piaf records on loop as a little girl. And I love this song and I love how she sings it. And so for me, it's more about sort of trying to transport to that sound and that place mm-hmm. and time. And I have a fascination with her as a singer. And so I find that for me, the character is more Piaf than it is right. truly the lady in the song. Although, you know, she does creep her way in there too with her sort of, I love the image of her getting drowned in her gin and tonic, you know, it's just great.
Well, I don't think it identifies the drink, but it's interesting that you've made it a gin and tonic. I've noted something about
Rene
already.
There's two, it's interesting as I was sort of delving into this piece, because as we all know, you know, these popular songs often are misheard and then repeated with different sort of modified lyrics and things. And so there are versions that are, mais dans son jean, un fantôme en blue jean.
Oh, okay.
So there's
okay.
jean and gin jean, and I like to do the gin.
So you are actually saying gin.
Yeah.
And that's all. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Because you're right. Not always is it that way in the lyrics.
Yeah.
All right. When you're thinking of the Canadian oeuvre, when you're thinking of all those songs produced from Canada, why was Claude Vellet one you wanted to include? Or was it because of the Piaf connection?
He was definitely someone that we wanted to include from the get-go. So my personal sort of family mélange is on my father's side is Québécois, and my mother's side is American. And so I remember very, very vividly and fondly listening to his music with my dad in the car. And my godmother is also an amateur singer, and she loves those sort of old chansonniers from Quebec. Mm. And so that sound was definitely one that we wanted to come and include into the disc. And when I discovered that he was the one who wrote this piece for Piaf, and my own personal connection with her as a singer and my admiration for her, it just became sort of the obvious choice
to be on here.
Yeah, okay. Because he also wrote, he has his own version that he performed, which is different. It's quite different.
The lyrics are completely
different. Yeah, the lyrics are different. Yeah. There's similar, you know, there's lots of musical material in there that's the same. But for me, my identification with this music is sort of like, well, this is the one that strikes a chord to me. Yeah. So we went with that direction.
Now, I can't quite do as that song where she looks back on 20 years of memories, but I can take you back 14 years. If one was to have been reading the Toronto Star in 2004, gazing through the Kiwanis competition results, you would have seen Mireille Asselin scoring an 89 in Baroque or classical opera and a 90 in Grand Opera. How much did Mireille enjoy those competitions 14 years ago?
I was singing Grand Opera 14 years ago. What was I thinking?
You think that was a bad choice?
No, it's so funny. You know, the more that you sort of go through this career, it's like anything. The more you realize you don't know, and the more you realize that you have to learn and develop and grow. And of course, now in the context of Grand Opera, you think I'm like, okay, well, I need to really just be super sort of technically savvy in this way, because it's a huge orchestra and it's a massive thing to pace. And so of course it's absolutely worthwhile as a student to learn those things as a one-off and to sort of explore the style. But it is pretty funny to think that I was singing that 13-year-old
getting up there and saying, no, wait, 14 years ago, you weren't 13. What am I saying?
Oh, we can
say that. Yeah. Sure. Let's let them believe that. Is there, what's the song on this album that the 2004 Mireille would never have been able to attempt?
Well, so, I mean, it's this album's actually sort of funny to a lot of people who know me quite well, because I have not sung very much popular music in my life. You know, I've always been pretty straight-laced and really into sort of the nerdy classical stuff. So in a large part, I'd say anything sort of remotely popular on the disc, I think 14 years ago I would have said, like, what, really? You know, Joni Mitchell?
You're going to do Joni Mitchell?
Nick Cohen. And that's so funny.
In 2009, you were asked on CBC Radio what you were learning about your voice at the time, and this is what you said.
I'm learning that it's a fickle, fickle creature. Mm-hmm. No. Learning how to sing has also been very illuminating about who I am as a person, because your voice is obviously contained within you, and depending how much sleep you've had and how well you've been eating and how well you take care of yourself and how you feel about yourself, that all is manifested in how you sing, I find.
Now, almost 10 years later, if learning how to sing has been illuminating as who I am as a person, mm-hmm. what is your voice teaching you now about who you are?
It's interesting to see how a voice changes as you age. Something that you're always told as you're training by those older and wiser than you, okay, just wait till you turn 30, you know, things are really going to shift. And that really happened, you know, it's fascinating.
What happened when you turned 30?
Your voice takes on more color and therefore has more weight. Hmm. And it's like you have to relearn how to sing. And the old sort of tools don't serve you as well as they used to. And so, singing really is this constant lifelong pursuit. And I have some people sort of who say that they're amazed to hear that singers still take voice lessons and coach constantly. And I'm constantly seeing my teacher and seeing pianists and coaches that I trust for their input, because it is something that is constantly changing as your body ages and changes. And it's something that I know women often talk about when they go through pregnancy and childbirth. There's mm-hmm. a massive change that happens then as well. Obviously, later on in life as well, at menopause, there's these big markers that sort of happen. And your voice goes along for the ride.
Which would also affect the music you pick.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
Like, you're not going to choose the same song you would have chosen.
Well, for example, one song that I'm very, very, very excited about and that I picked for a very personal reason is the Red River Valley.
Right.
Because actually, tomorrow morning, I'm getting on a plane and flying out to the Red River Valley and getting married.
What?
Yeah.
What? Congratulations.
So that was a song that I'd actually
didn't
know.
The day before your wedding,
well,
you're doing this?
Okay, so I've got a week and a half.
Okay,
yeah.
All right. Okay, wait a second. I thought that was a little bit too dramatic.
No,
but
no.
That's
not
exciting.
That insane. But that's one piece that really sort of crept up on me. You know, at first I was like, oh, that's a pretty little folk song. And okay, we should, you know, include something from the prairies. And then the more I've sung it, the more it's become something extremely personal for me. And when we first premiered the album, my fiance and his dad were in the audience. He had come out from Manitoba to be able to be there for the CD release, and I could like not make it through the piece. I was so emotional about it. So it's interesting how these things sort of grow and change and can mean different things to you at different times in your life.
We'll have to go out of this with Red River Valley now. I was going to go out with Hallelujah, but who cares about Leonard Cohen? We're going to go out with
right.
that.
He gets enough airtime.
Exactly. Lastly, there's no German on this album, but I wanted to end by playing you what your dream of the future was in 2009.
Maybe go to Germany eventually for a couple years and be able to work with an opera house there in what we call a Fest contract. Germany is one of the only places in the world where they hire opera singers almost like public servants, and you work with them and you have a steady paycheck, whereas the nature of the business otherwise is typically a freelance business, going from one show or one engagement to another. So it'd be nice to go over there maybe in a couple of years and work in a company on a more stable basis.
On a more stable basis, stability in a music career was the dream. How close did you get? How close would you say you are?
Oh, it's fascinating to listen back to that interview. I have not heard that since I
almost
recorded
10 years
it.
Ago, yeah,
that's amazing. I mean, I I would actually kind of go against the old Mireille at mm-hmm. this point. One of the things that I've really, really enjoyed from the past 10 years is the variety of projects that I've been able to take on, and being able to travel to a variety of different places in the world. And you know, I was just in Italy, and I work a lot in the States, and I go to France every once in a while. Next year, I'll be in England, and that's amazing, you know. And I definitely would not rule out going to Germany and doing a fest. That's still something that would be, I think, an appealing thing to try for a few years. But I do really enjoy. I've learned to love the variety and the instability and the chaos that can come with that, and sort of the madness, as we sort of say in our family. Here comes the madness again. But I guess maybe I'm addicted to the madness now.
That's not such a bad thing. I feel like the singer of the Edith Piaf song would approve.
Yes,
for sure. Absolutely.
So.
Absolutely. Congratulations on everything you've done.
Thanks so much
for being here today.
It's been a pleasure.
Break a leg tonight.
Thank you.
Mireille Salin and Amici at Dominion Chalmers United Church at 5 for Music and Beyond. From Mireille Asselin and Amici's album Inspired by Canada. They're performing in about half an hour at Music and Beyond at Dominion Chalmers United Church. Doug Hempstead, in Take a Look at the Road.
Did she break the news with you that she's getting married?
Yeah. So that was kind of neat, actually. I think others know up until now. I think probably the family is aware.
Imagine getting the gig to be the wedding singer for her. Like, no pressure. Right?
Yeah, that would be kind of a... I didn't think about that. Yeah. Maybe she's doing it herself.
No takers.